Hi, I'm Paul Ingalls. Welcome to the second hour of the White Album Listening Party. To mark the 1968 release of the Beatles' diverse double album collection of songs, we've assembled a gang of radio personalities and musicians to hang out in the studio here and elsewhere around the country and listen track by track to what came to be known as the Beatles' White Album. Let me tell you who we have here. Scott McNichol, Luciano Urbano, Travis Parkin, Suzanne Kreider, and Rob Martinez here at our studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And then around the country, John Spurney, Christy Krueger, Douglas Grant, and David Gans. Last hour, we had just started Side 2, and we pick up with cuts 3 and 4 on Side 2. Blackbird by Paul McCartney, followed by Piggies, written by George Harrison. And we're also happy to have with us on the line from London, Steve Turner, who's author of A Hard Day's Right, the stories behind all the Beatles songs. So, Steve, what can you tell us about these two?
Blackbird was written by Paul. He says the tune came from a classical tune that was in a sort of teach-yourself guitar songbook that he and George had when they were teenagers. I mean, it's hard to actually detect that influence, but I think what Paul was meaning was, like, by trying to play this classical piece and then sort of altering it a bit, he came up with this beautiful new tune. I think it also, you know, lyrically alluded to what was going on in America at the time, which was, you know, the death or assassination of Martin Luther King and the race riots in America. It was a kind of a song of encouragement to the African-American community in America. Piggies was a George song. I think it was meant semi-humorously. You know, it was attack on the bourgeoisie, you know, calling them pigs in the same way that Orwell sort of used the pigs to refer to the ruling class in Animal Farm. Unfortunately, it's one of those songs that Charles Manson took a little bit too literally. And, you know, when George sings about the knives and forks and attacking the piggies, you know, Manson took that seriously, and in fact they scrawled piggies in blood at some of the sites of the murders, the Manson family murders.
And Harrison was, of course, horrified when he heard that, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Anyone else on Piggies?
It's definitely not really characteristic of George Harrison, I think, and that's why I like it. It's sonically more like McCartney. With the harpsichords and cellos. It's this very kind of Baroque-sounding piece of music, except that part where the piano goes, there's this little, like, blues thing thrown in there, which I love. And then that last flourish with the strings where George says, "One more time." And it, to me, that sounds like ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, will be coming next year or something like that, so... Mm-hmm. That's what I think about Piggies.
Yeah, and Piggies also, you know, has the one thing that has to be said about the White Album is that there are a lot of sound effects on it. Like back in the USSR as the airplane, Piggies obviously has the sound of pigs. Blackbird has the sound of a bird just throughout the entire album. And then, you know, you could argue that Revolution Number 9 is essentially only sound effects.
I was also going to say that lyrically, I thought Piggies was really rich. You know, it's him really taking a very critical look. You know, you can see them out for dinner with their piggy wives clutching forks and knives to eat the bacon. You know,
cannibalistic.
Yeah, it's very poignant, actually.
Yeah, it has a little Taxman flavor.
Yeah, so much the objector voice coming out.
Well, Piggies does kind of verge on self-righteousness a little bit too.
Yeah, I just think I think every one of us has sort of had that feeling at some point that you've been in the presence of a piggy.
Christy Krueger, why don't you start us off on Blackbird?
Blackbird, I think, is an absolutely timeless piece of music in the way that Bach or Beethoven is timeless. It is this simple, beautiful melody. The production is so simplistic. The only change that we really hear is that in the B section, Paul doubles his vocal. Other than that, all we hear is just the guitar and his foot tapping. And it's one of those pieces of music that is so rich harmonically, yet it's so easy to execute. A beginner could execute that guitar part. And I think that's why every beginner learning to play guitar, one of the first songs they learn is Blackbird.
Again, it just has that incredible deceptive simplicity that McCartney is so gifted at, where it's not difficult physically to play at all, But when you kind of take it apart as a musician, you know, it's very easy to put your hands, your fingers where you need to put your fingers to play it. When playing it, you're sort of like, why would anyone have ever thought to put their fingers here?
I think it will be around for centuries. I think it's just timeless.
And lyrically, one of Paul's most poetic as well.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night.
Piggies and Blackbird, and I'll start us off by saying that Piggies sure sounded menacing to me back then. Even a song that had damn in it, as in damn good whacking, seemed illicit to a 12-year-old. Anyone else on these songs?
1968 was a pivotal year in my life. I was in the seventh grade, which was elementary school. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and I remember my parents didn't get real upset about it. It was almost like their reaction was this really creepy blend of fear, is it going to be worse now, and sort of some relief. And I remember I was just devastated when Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And what I learned from those two murders was that people who speak up get killed. Then that fall, I went to high school. I was in the eighth grade. And so a song like Piggies was just terrifying to me. I mean, I didn't even listen to the words. It was more like all the what I would call satanic sounding songs on the album were just really scary. It's not that any of it made any sense. It's just that the White Album just seemed to reinforce the scary world syndrome, a lot of the scary songs.
Moving on with side two, here comes Rocky Raccoon and Don't Pass Me By, and Why Don't We Do It in the Road? Beatle author Steve Turner, what's the headline on where these songs came from?
Rocky Raccoon was, that was Paul's song, and it was, again, written out in Rishikesh. When they were in India, strangely enough, their minds turned back to Liverpool and childhood and things like that. And, you know, Rocky Raccoon's basically a cowboy song. And it shows Paul's sort of inventiveness and his ability to make up, create characters and stories, which he was always very good at. John wasn't as good at doing that. You know, John would deal more with sort of emotion and feeling, and Paul kind of avoided emotion and feeling, really, and tended to make up stories.
All I can say about Rocky Raccoon is the tack piano is just fabulous.
Which was played by George Martin.
But it was recorded at half speed, just like the piano solo on In My Life, which is another beautiful Beatles piano solo played by George Martin. That was also recorded at half speed. That obviously enables the musician to play the part more slowly, which is easier, but it also changes the timbre of the instrument when you play it back at the regular speed. And, you know, to me, that's a big part of Rocky Raccoon is just that instantly evocative saloon piano sound. And it's one of my favorite things on that song.
And his really bad fake Southern accent is also something to be noted.
Yeah, that always made me laugh. And again, I'm giving the 12-year-old perspective, but it was a stunt for us to be able to sing back those lyrics. Somewhere in the Black Mountain Hills of South Dakota, there lived a young boy named Rocky Raccoon. We all tried to see how far we could get.
I still can't get it right. I still mess that up.
Yeah, jamming all those syllables into that short space.
Yeah.
Don't Pass Me By, Ringo's star turn here.
When I was listening to some old interviews the Beatles had done, old radio interviews from the 60s, there was one from 1964 in Australia where Ringo is shouting in the background about a new song he's written, and it's Don't Pass Me By, and Paul's saying, oh, you know, I don't know if we're going to put it on the next album. But that just shows you how long that song had been knocking around, you know, like 5 years before it actually got released on an album.
Don't Pass Me By has sort of struck me as a reprise or a tip of the hat to Ringo's cover of Buck Owens' Act Naturally. You know, it's got a fiddle in it and a country arrangement.
It's countryish because I love only dun, you.
Yeah. How's that kind? I think it sort of begs for a country arrangement. I mean, that's definitely not my favorite song on the album. I was playing a bar somewhere and somebody walked by and started singing it. And when I heard it, the melody on its own, I heard it in a totally different way. Don't pass me by, don't make me cry, don't make me blue.
Yeah. It's a great melody.
Excellent. Add that to the set, Christy.
I actually, at one point I did, but then I can't remember how it goes. The lyrics start out and then they get really weird or something.
Well, you're in a car crash and lost your hair. And
and then I was like, yeah, I don't know. What is that instrument that goes throughout the whole song, sort of gives me a headache?
There's this Leslie piano playing on.
Leslie, yeah, something through
yeah,
a Leslie.
Yeah, and it's just like really obnoxious and hard to listen to.
Why Don't We Do It in the Road?
Why Don't We Do It in the Road was a song, again, a Paul song. A complete contrast to what you expect of Paul if you think, you know, he can only write Yesterday. Very sort of loud, attacking, primal song. written in Rishikesh, he saw the monkeys out there mating and thought, you know, why aren't we like the monkeys? Why do we attach such shame to making love, whereas the animals don't? That was his reasoning behind the song. It sounds like a very trivial question, but it could be the most profound question. You know, why don't we behave like animals?
Christy?
Love it. First of all, I love the sentiment. It's so simple. Why don't we do it in the road? No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road? And there's no other lyrics the entire song. And I love the fact that the song sounds like doing it in the road. He's used sort of a dirty blues to score his desire here. And I also love how vocally towards the end he is, he's sort of heading to what I would deem something like a climax. It sounds like he's getting closer to that towards the end of the song. I think it's just very bold. It's a very bold suggestion. And it's something I would love my lover to say to me. It's just a really, just open love right out there. I mean, it's a big statement of freedom. It sounds like doing it in the road.
Okay, so. Note that, guys. Christy prefers the direct approach.
Duly noted.
This is all McCartney, by the way. Every part of it.
As is, Wild Honey Pie. And I don't know, like, as long as we're talking about songs we don't like...
I don't like Wild Honey Pie.
And I don't like Why Don't We Do It in the Road. Like, to me, there are a lot of songs on the White Album that, you know, when they were assembling the album, they had recorded all these songs, and George Martin sort of begged them to make it a single disc rather than a two-disc album. And I personally feel there are a lot of songs on the record that are just, you know, even as much as I love the Beatles and as unassailably great as they are, I really think of as filler. And to me, it's a really interesting kind of party game to sort of sit down and say, if you were going to make the White Album,
which would you keep and which would you...
If it was just going to be a one disc.
But the White Album was, I think that was the height of their... egos really being out of hand in a way. That I think that comes across, because you do get stuff on there that maybe if it was a record company today putting out that record, they wouldn't have those songs.
Well, the other way of saying that is that they were each discovering their own individual voices, and this was the moment of their differentiation.
Yeah, I think a really strange thing about the White Album is that you have a situation where the Beatles are almost acting as sidemen for whoever wrote the song, you know? And the strongest voice that you hear in an individual song is just that of the writer, and everybody else is just kind of there doing whatever the writer tells them to do.
Exactly.
Now, somewhere in the black mining hills of Dakota, there lived a young boy named Rocky Raccoon. And one day his woman ran off with another guy, hit young Rocky in the eye. Rocky didn't like that. He said, I'm gonna get that boy. So one day he walked into town, booked himself a room in the local saloon. Rocky Raccoon checked into his room, only to find Gideon's Bible. Rocky had come equipped with a gun to shoot off the legs of his rival. His rival, it seems, had broken his dreams by stealing the girl of his fancy. Her name was McGill, and she called herself Lil, but everyone knew her as Nancy. Now she and her man, who called himself Dan, were in the next room at the hoedown. A Rocky burst in and grinning a grin, he said, Danny boy, this is a showdown. But Daniel was hot, he drew fast and shot, and Rocky collapsed in the corner.
came in, stinking of gin, and proceeded to lie on the table. He said, Rocky, you met your match. And Rocky said, Doc, it's only a scratch. And I'll be better, Doc, as soon as I am able. And now Rocky Raccoon, he fell back in his room, only to find Gideon's Bible. Gideon checked out, and he left it no doubt.
So unfair. You were in a car crash and you lost your hair. You said that you would be late about an hour or two. I said, that's alright, I'm waiting here, just waiting to hear from you. Don't pass me by, don't make me cry, don't make me blue. 'Cause you know, darling, don't make me cry.
dead in the road. Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road?
Why don't we do it in the road? Don't pass me by and Rocky Raccoon. Scott?
Rocky Raccoon. An episode of Gunsmoke put the song. But otherwise, what really rings in my head is Underground FM. You know, when I was just being introduced to it, and this song was the one they really seemed to pick up on.
That's something worth mentioning, because in 1968... this album was so deep. I mean, it had so many songs. And if it were more the era of hit radio on AM that we were dependent on up until 1966, 1967, we wouldn't have heard very many of these songs. Whatever they might have picked for a single, we might have heard just a couple of tunes. But because of FM radio, the DJs who were given free rein were really digging deep and playing just about everything from start to finish. Anybody else? Travis?
The other thing I wanted to mention, the song Don't Pass Me By had a beautiful bluegrass fiddle was brought in on that song. And my parents were big, you know, Hank Williams, Patsy Cline people. And so as kids in our late teens, it was totally uncool to listen to country music. But this, when this came in, when this fiddle came in, I had to kind of rethink my position, I guess I'd say.
Suzanne?
These three cuts really epitomize to me how I just couldn't get this album. You know, as an adult, I love it, and I really respect all the music and enjoy it. But as a kid, it was like, oh, my God, these guys are so freaked out on drugs. It's so crazy because all these songs were so different. You got, like, what, Crossover to Country, a song my grandparents would love, and then just this incredibly lascivious, you know, I've seen monkeys copulating in India, and it's just like it was upsetting. I thought I lost them.
Okay, Suze, we'll see if they can reclaim your love with the two acoustic gems that close out side two. We'll hear those next. I'm Paul Ingles. You're listening to the White Album Listening Party. More after this break.